The Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The NHL Draft, first round, Friday. The Predators, as of now, have three picks in the first round. Number 5 overall, number 23 overall, and number 26 overall. They also have number 35 overall in the second round, number 55 overall in the second round, and number 67 overall in the third round. So by my quick math, that's 6 picks in the top 100 for the Nashville Predators. Again, as of now, Barry Trotz will join Jared Stillman, scheduled for the 3 o'clock hour on Stillman and Company. But again, because the Predators at the moment have 3 first-round picks, I was curious about how other NHL teams have fared that made 3 first-round picks in a single draft. And it's actually happened more often than you think. It's happened every draft year at least once since 2020. It happened once last year, the Blackhawks. It happened once in 2023, the Blues. It happened 3 times in 2022. The Coyotes, Sabres, and Blackhawks all made 3 first-round selections in the 2022 draft. The Blue Jackets did it in 2021, and the Devils and Senators did it in 2020. So it happens a lot. I was actually surprised by this, to find out how often it's happened. I thought it would be instructive to look back at how some of these teams did making these selections. Now, I'm not going to look at last year's Chicago Blackhawks, for example, because I don't think any of these players have played in the NHL. So I wanted to go back, 4 or 5 years, because I think that's a reasonable amount of time, really, to look at how certain players have popped. There's one example that jumps off the page to me. The Ottawa Senators in 2020, they had 3 first-round picks, number 3 overall, number 5 overall, and number 28 overall. So they did have 2 top 5 picks. But if you miss on either of those picks, that can really set you back. In 2020, the Ottawa Senators took Tim Stützle, number 3 overall, top line forward for Senators. Yeah. They took.
You may not have heard of him. Jared, have you heard of Tim Stützle?
Probably not.
I don't know. He's really good.
Outstanding player.
Yeah.
Jake Sanderson, number 5 overall.
Really
outstanding
good.
Young really defenseman. Good. And Ridly Gregg, number 28 overall. He's a key bottom 6 player for the Ottawa Senators. So the Senators nailed it. And that draft has set them up to take the step we saw them take this past
season. I haven't heard of any of those guys, so they must suck, according to Jared.
Thank you, Chase. So the Ottawa Senators are an example of nailed it with Stützle, Sanderson.
I mean, they haven't won anything yet,
right?
But you hope
they have,
and they've picked high a lot. But those are 3 good picks. It looks like those are hits.
Yes, absolutely. The most infamous example: the 2015 Boston Bruins. Not only did they have 3 first-round picks, they had 3 consecutive first-round picks. They picked 13 overall, 14 overall, and 15 overall.
That was crazy.
And boy, oh boy, did they do whatever the opposite of nailing it is. They took Jakub Zboril, a defenseman, number 13 overall. They took Jake DeBrusk, who's had a solid NHL career, but nothing.
He's a good player.
Right.
Good player.
Jake DeBrusk, number 14 overall.
At 14, DeBrusk, I think, is certainly not a home run, but he's been a really good player. He's a good NHL player.
No longer a member of the Bruins, now a member of the Vancouver Canucks. And Zach Senyshyn, I believe is how you pronounce it, forward at number 15 overall.
So that's a 1-for-3 with, I would say, a double. Like, I mean,
with 2 duds. Zboril and Senyshyn never made anything.
Right. And we should point out that happens, especially in that section, after the first 6 or 7 picks each year.
Yes.
Once you get into the middle part of the first round, it's a little more, it's more hit or miss than it is in probably any other sport with the exception of baseball, right? Where every year, if you go down the list, you're going to see guys that you've never heard of. Going, wait a minute, I've never even heard of that guy. He was the 15th pick. So it kind of couches your expectations of, oh, we got 3 first-round picks. It's very wide-ranging of how that can
Bruins,
because remember, Ottawa, we just lauded Ottawa.
Yeah.
2 of those picks were in the top 5.
That is true.
It's a little easier to hit on those picks.
Yes. The Bruins, by the way, didn't suffer greatly from that because I believe it was the year before they drafted David Pastrnak, and the year after they drafted Charlie McAvoy. So yes, they had to make up for it. But here's something fun. Would you like to know the three players who went directly behind those three picks at number 16, number 17,
I'm sure
and number 18
Bruins fans
in 2015?
Know.
Are you ready for this? At number 16, Matthew Barzal. At number 17,
player.
Kyle Connor. And number 18, Thomas Chabot.
Oh, three really good ones.
Yeah, so the Bruins, they did not do a great job there.
That's why I always try to remember these guys are high school seniors. They're high school seniors. They're at prom. They're messing around in the classroom. They're young. Some of them can't even grow a beard.
That is true. But Willie, I want to talk to you about some other examples, and I would love to get your viewpoint on it, because I think if the Predators ultimately make the three picks, I think what this exercise shows you is that you need to hit on at least one. If you hit on two out of three, that's really good. If you hit on all three, you should be set up.
It's a franchise changer.
You
yeah.
should be set up for success.
And I would throw in that early second round pick that they have. What is that? 36.
35.
35. So four of the top 35. I mean, what's the difference? I mean, you're kind of on the fringe. You're all but mm-hmm. the first round there.
So here are some other examples in recent history. Let's go to the 2021 Columbus Blue Jackets. They picked 5th overall, 12th overall, and 25th overall. They took Kent Johnson, number 5 overall, Cole Sillinger, number 12 overall, and defenseman Corson Koolemans, number 25 overall. I'm not too familiar with Koolemans, but Johnson and Sillinger. Johnson has been more productive than Sillinger, but how would you describe that draft haul for the Blue Jackets first
round? How do you spell Koolemans?
C-E-U-L-E-M-A-N-S. Corson, not Carson. Corson.
C-E-U-L-E-M-A-N-S. Oh, honestly, I don't know anything about him, but I would say he is on a more normal track for a late first-round pick, so it's still to be determined. He's played a couple years in the AHL, and he hasn't made it up to the NHL yet. So these guys are all about 22. So you should be seeing, you should start to be seeing the signs. So I think the higher two first round picks, Cole Sillinger and Kent Johnson, are both very good NHL players. But I think Columbus is trying to determine, are these foundational type of guys that we want long term? I think Johnson is on his way. Sillinger, I think if you look at what happened with Columbus last year, like every team's got a different outlook, right? They brought in a lot of Russian players. They had a lot of young players, some non-first-rounders. But they have some young players that were doing some things. Like on certain nights, they were like, wow.
Marchenko.
Yeah.
Who else is coming? There's another Russian player in there, too, whose yeah. name is escaping me right now.
And you're like, woo, these guys look really good. I mean, ask the Predators how that went. Late in the season, they got absolutely destroyed in Columbus.
They did.
And so they can score. Now, defending was a whole other thing, but they've got sort of a cluster of young guys that they got to sort out. And so I would think that that's a team that other teams are going to go, hey, we're trying to get a little younger. Can we give you some veterans in exchange for one of these young guys, and maybe you get some stabilization? But I think if I had that as my three guys for my first-round picks, I would say that's a pretty good grade. Johnson alone. Johnson looks like he's going to be really good.
Now, here's an interesting one. The Vegas Golden Knights in 2017. So that would have been their first entry draft.
Yes.
Their first
pick. This is a really intriguing.
Their first pick at number 6 overall. You know him. You may not love him, Predators fans. Cody Glass, number 6 overall.
Come on. You got to love Cody Glass.
Nice guy.
As a guy.
Nice
yeah.
guy. It just hasn't worked out at the NHL level. Nick Suzuki at number 13 overall, and Eric Brandstrom, a defenseman at number 15 overall. So we know Cody Glass around here. He's bounced around the league. But here's what's interesting. We know the Golden Knights, they trade their first-round picks like they're nothing and their top prospects. Nick Suzuki, who is now the captain of the Montreal Canadiens, the Golden Knights traded him to Montreal for Max Pacioretty, and Eric Brandstrom was involved in the deal for Mark Stone. So although Suzuki and Brandstrom didn't really amount to anything with the Golden Knights, they did help the Golden Knights acquire two important veteran players.
And Branstrom is a stroke of genius because at the time he was a pretty high-rated prospect that has not blossomed into an everyday NHL defenseman. He's a fringe, up-and-down kind of AHL guy that's bounced around. And they got Mark Stone as the principal guy in that deal. Suzuki has turned out to be a – I think he's the captain of the Canadiens.
He is the captain of the Canadiens.
He's very, very good. So they gave up a pretty good player for Max Pacioretty, who gave them a ready-made guy towards the end of his prime. They got some good mileage out of him. But the Vegas Golden Knights are in a category of their own, would we agree, of how they did it. And you can go back to that draft where they worked the system as well as you could possibly work it to get those extra assets and turn them into something quick.
So
I don't know. I don't know if we can learn anything from Vegas because it was so unique.
I think what I'm seeing here, like you can go back, like Washington had three first round picks in 2004. Alex Ovechkin, number one overall. Jeff Schultz, a defenseman. He was a solid hand for a long time at number 27 overall. And Mike Green, who had some outstanding offensive seasons and was a big part of the revitalization of the Washington Capitals alongside Nick Backstrom and Alex Semin, who was another first-round pick of the Capitals a couple of years earlier. So I do think that what this tells me is if you have three first-round picks, you better hit on one of them. You better hit on one of them.
Not to mention the two second-round picks.
Right.
Right. So somewhere in there, they need some hits.
Right. If you think of draft picks like lottery tickets, I think that's an easy metaphor, right? The Predators have three lottery tickets. The fifth overall lottery ticket has more value than the 23rd overall lottery ticket and the 26th overall lottery ticket. But if the Predators stay with the three first-round picks, they really need to hit on at least one of them. It may not end up being number 5 overall. Maybe they find the diamond in the rough at number 23 overall. But they absolutely need to hit on one of them.
And Jared went through the drafts last year at one point, and I took issue with part of what he was saying because I still think the jury is out on drafts from about 2021 this coming year, and that's guys like LaRue and Svechkov. That's you need to start to see something there. And that's with Sillinger and some of the other guys you mentioned in that draft. When you're about 22, you need to be starting to see the stuff because you can still have the light go on, but you need to see the picture coming into focus. So we're not still sure what the Predators have from drafts 2021 until present, and you're about to add this group to the pool of prospects that they're still hopeful they're going to get some measure of special players out of that. But I think we can safely say now that I forget exactly what year Roman Josi was and UC Saros. I think Saros was 2014, 2013, somewhere in there. There's a section of time between about 2014 and 2021 where they were not able to draft a special player. They drafted a lot of players that made the NHL and are solid NHL players. But guys who move the needle, they are desperate to get one or two of those guys. You've talked about the Stars so often. The Stars, I don't know if they have loads and loads of NHL players, but they've hit home runs on two or three guys, and that's a franchise changer.
And I think another thing working against the Predators in the eyes of some fans is you look at the first-round picks they've made in recent years who are no longer members of the team. You can go back as far as 2014, Kevin Fiala, no longer a member of the team. Dante Fabbro, no longer a member of the team. Ellie Tolvanen, no longer a member of the team.
Right.
Philip Tomasino, no longer a member of the team.
Right.
Yaroslav Askarov, no longer a member of the team.
And Askarov is a special case.
Right.
But I would say that
Fiala was traded for Granlund.
Fiala, obviously, they knew was a really good player, and they made a bold move to get Granlund a really good player. But other than those two, Askarov, who, you know, we'll see. We don't know. Fiala, we know. None of those other guys that they've discarded are special players. They're, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, they've drafted a lot of good players.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are all good, steady NHL players that I don't think move the needle. Now, you can get into what they got when they moved these guys. Did they get enough? That's a different discussion. But just
basically who they draft, who's the person.
Let's go to Bob in Antioch quickly on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Bob, thank you for holding, and please go ahead.
Good afternoon, guys. I know it's going to take 4 to 6 years from the time they're drafted until we see how they really are, but in this year's draft, will you guys be satisfied if they wind up 4 or 5 years from now with a player with whose impact is similar to David Legwand or Seth Jones or players like that?
Thank you for the call, Bob. And now, if you're speaking about their impact with the Predators specifically, Seth Jones is a little bit of a different case. Because
so those two guys are the only top five picks
yes,
that they've ever had.
That is true. Jones was here for 2+ seasons before being traded for Ryan Johansson. You know, I was not here for the David Legwand era. David Legwand, I think, is a – would you consider him a polarizing figure among Predators fans?
I don't know about polarizing. I think it is a feeling of a guy who, for the second pick that they hoped would be the franchise cornerstone, it was pretty evident after a couple of years that he was never going to be that. So then the question would be, could you be satisfied with what he was, which was a good NHL player for a long, long time, that you knew what you were getting, and it always had you wanting more, probably. But it was always like, well, the guy's not a bust, right? The guy held basically every franchise record that there was for a long time just because he played for a long time. He went to the post, and he put up some decent numbers. In so I don't know if that's polarizing.
In,
right?
his full seasons with the Predators, so not the one game he played in 1998, 1999, or the section of his season in 2013-14 when he was traded to the Red Wings. So over, you know, 13-ish seasons, he averaged 48.3 points per 82 games. Not what you're wanting from the second overall pick, yeah. But he did have the longevity, right? So that's how you would weigh it. Is it about the longevity? David Legwand was a contributor for this team for more than a decade, even if he wasn't the high-end
right.
player. 615-737-1025. I guess it depends on how you define somebody's value. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Scott Wheeler, who will join us tomorrow at 11:20 tomorrow. He is one of the Athletic's top NHL draft analysts. He has his new mock draft out. We'll discuss that. There's also some interesting questions in the text line about the Predators' approach to the offseason. We'll get to those coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Talking Predators, by the way. Robbie Stanley texted me during the break and said, Paul Kariya deserves the Hall of Fame for no other reason than getting David Legwand to 63 points in a season. By the way, I believe the class of 2025 of the Hockey Hall of Fame will be unveiled later today. And if I'm also not mistaken, Pekka now eligible for the Hockey Hall of Fame. I doubt he is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and we can have that discussion.
But we didn't think Shea Weber was either. And
that,
all of a sudden, boom,
is true.
He was in there.
So Scott Wheeler, who will join us tomorrow in the first hour, the NHL draft analyst for The Athletic, released his final mock draft of the 2025 draft season. It was earlier today. And he has the Predators selecting Porter Martone, the winger. He writes, my sense for this pick hasn't changed. I could see the Preds considering Hagans, Martin, or Denoyer, I believe that's how it's pronounced, if he's around here. But I also know they were in Brampton a lot to watch Martone this year, including upper management. And I think he's their guy. Martone would give them the high-skill, top-of-the-lineup forward prospect they've been searching for as long as the organization has existed. Right shot wingers with his size and profile don't grow on trees either, even if center is the more premium position. He's listed at 6'3", 204 pounds. So I am curious how Predators fans would feel if they take a winger at number 5 overall instead of a center. So let me know. 615-737-1025.
I think it will be a question if they take Martone. But I think, number one, there will be some guys who are listed as centers at the top of this draft that don't end up playing center. Because
mm-hmm.
it's like D-Mace, a cornerback. You drafted a guy at a corner, and he ends up playing safety. Or you draft a guy as a tackle, and he plays
guard.
Everybody.
Guard.
That does happen. You always hope. In baseball, it's the same thing. You draft a guy as a shortstop. He ends up playing third. He ends up playing outfield. He ends up playing first because your body changes, right? You're 18. You don't know exactly how your body's going to fill out. You try to project as best you can. But I think the most important thing is you got to get a really good player here. And if it's not a center, I know the ideal scenario, and Barry Trotz, I'm sure we'll say it today in some form at 3 o'clock, the perfect pick would be a center who ends up being the number one center that you've been looking for. David Legwand was a number one center, but he was not a great number one center. Ryan Johansson was a really good number one center for a decent-sized window, not for a long time, and it would fluctuate, right? They haven't had the Alexander Barkov or, Connor McDavid. You hate to use him. He's the best player in the world. Nobody. But there are guys that you can draft who end up being your 1C for a long time and a really good player. They have lacked that. But if it's not there, it's not there. And if Martone is the best winger, the best player by far in your mind, then that's what you go with.
So, Derek, before you respond, three responses to my question about how would Predators fans feel if Porter Martone was the selection, as predicted by Scott Wheeler. One texter says, gross, LOL. One texter says, if Hagans is available and they don't take him, I'll be pissed. Sean says, if the kid, meaning Martone, can turn into a Scott Hartnell 2.0, I'll take it. Now, Hartnell, we all love Scott Hartnell around here. Hartnell had a long career, played 17 years in the NHL. At his best, he was a 30-goal, 60-point guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Scott Hartnell carved out himself a nice career. Yep. Paul says, whoever the Preds take, if he's any good, he'll likely be headed to the Wild right before his breakout season. One texter says, old swing and a miss, Barry, I assume, if they don't take Martone. Jeff says, Martone would be fine, but knowing the Predators' luck, Schaefer will fall to them just like Jones did back then. Now, if you recall, in the 2013 NHL draft, there was a lot of discussion that Seth Jones would be the number one overall pick in the draft. That did not happen. Nathan MacKinnon went number one overall. A lot of mock drafts around that time had the Predators taking a number four overall. You know, this young up-and-comer out of Finland, his name is Alexander Barkov. Can you only imagine?
That's who I think... That's who was slotted to the Predators in more mock drafts than any other player was Barkov. But Florida took him second, and I don't remember any of the mock drafts at the time having him going that early. It threw everybody off.
Yes. I mean, Jones was the best player available to the Predators at number
Most people
four.
Had Jones 1, MacKinnon 2.
Drouin
3, and then Barkov 4.
Oh, man, if only. Yeah. If only. So we did get one text that I do want to address. One texter says, I've heard offer sheet mentioned a bit this week / last week. Can you please explain what that is and maybe provide a likely example and a dream example of how the Predators could use this? Thanks, love the show. Hey, we love you too. So let's really quickly do a offer sheet primer. So offer sheets are a way that one team can poach a restricted free agent from another team. And the way it works is it's based on the cap hit of the offer sheet. So I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this as simply as I can. So depending on the cap hit, there is a corresponding draft pick compensation that the team has to give you. So for example, if the Predators wanted to extend an offer sheet to player X, and the annual average value of that offer sheet, so the price of the contract per year, was between roughly $7 million and $9.3 million. The Predators would have to give up a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick. The kicker is the picks that are used have to be your own picks. So, for example, the Predators could not use the second and third of their first-round picks in an offer sheet because they did not originally belong to the Predators. They belong to the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Vegas Golden Knights through the San Jose Sharks. So you have to own your own picks. But Willie, let's use the example from a year ago with the Edmonton Oilers in the St. Louis Blues. So the St. Louis Blues targeted a young defenseman named Philip Roberg and a young forward named Dylan Holloway, who were on the Edmonton Oilers. They were restricted free agents. The Oilers weren't sure if they were going to be able to re-sign them, so the Blues signed them to offer sheets. The Oilers then have a week to match. And if the Oilers match the offer sheet in this scenario, the contract that the Blues whipped up, that's the contract that those players get. They can't renegotiate.
Right.
So why don't you take it from there with Broberg and Holloway, just to give our listeners.
Yeah, and I think we should define. Broberg and Holloway were sort of young up-and-comers who the offer sheet didn't have to be an enormous amount of money, but they were able to get above the level that the Oilers were able to match because the Oilers had a lot of salary cap problems. So what has happened traditionally is GMs have shied away from trying to poach a restricted free agent because most of the time what you're doing is negotiating the contract for the other team because, as Adam said, they have the right to match it. So you have to overpay. You have to sort of go above and say, I want the other team to say, golly, we're not matching that. That's ridiculous. Or we can't match that. And that's what the Flyers tried to do with Shea Weber, which is the most famous example of a restricted free agent offer in the Predators' history. Shea Weber was offered an enormous contract, which, by the way, is still in effect. It's still active because it was a 15-year contract. And it was such a high-end offer that the Flyers said the lowly Predators and their mid-level budget will not be able to match this. But the Predators did. And so that what ended up happening, it wasn't the ideal contract for David Poile, but they did the negotiations for them. And it had been a really tough negotiation heading into that. They matched it. So that's what happens more often than not. So you're trying to find that level of is this player out there, A, willing to sign an offer sheet? That's A. And then B, will the other team match it?
So another example.
And because it worked last year, I think people are wondering, yes, are more teams going to try this than have before because of the success of what the Blues had with the two guys they got last year from Edmonton?
So 5 years ago, the Montreal Canadiens tendered an offer sheet to Sebastian Aho, the top line center for the Carolina Hurricanes. It had an annual average value of $8.454 million. The Hurricanes then had 7 days to match, or they would have received a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick in compensation from the Canadiens. The way that the Canadiens structured it, because it's not just the cap hit, it's also the salary and things of that nature, teams get creative. So it's like, we're going to pay all of his salary up front. And this cheap team, they're not going to be able to pay, similar to what you were talking about with Shea Weber. The Canadiens matched it, and that's the contract that Aho played under for the Hurricanes. They weren't able to renegotiate. That was the contract. So,
yeah. And they laughed, like, because I think Montreal, when they signed the offer sheet, like, ha-ha, Carolina's not going to be able to do it. And immediately Carolina was laughing and said, hey, thanks for making it happen for us. We were having some trouble ourselves, and now we've got our guy. I would say this, though, Adam. You tell me if you agree. I used the example of Noah Dobson yesterday, who, as we sit here today, because the window's not open yet, right? I don't know what the first day is you can sign a guy to an offer sheet, but it's not for a few weeks, right? It's not till around the same time as unrestricted free agency, July 1st. Is it in that neighborhood?
It's
definitely after the draft.
Yes.
So between now and that date, whenever it is, teams can find common ground and sign some of these guys. But right now, Noah Dobson is a defensive player. I think has got – there's a lot of things you can say. Is that a fit with the Predators? Yeah. Would he be worth, in your mind, if let's say you signed him to a $9.3 million offer sheet and you had to give up a first, second, and third? To me, I think he is absolutely worth it.
I think I may lean that way as well. But again,
and the Islanders might be in a position
to because they've got some tough choices. And remember, they're about to pick the first pick in the draft, and they're likely going to pick Schaefer, the cornerstone franchise defenseman. Dobson is not that, but he's really, really good. To me, that would be a guy that I would circle, not just for the Predators, but around the league, is what if you were to sign him to an offer sheet and really put the screws to the Islanders?
And the Predators, based on that annual average value, would be able to do that because they have their own first-round pick, they have their own second-round pick, and they have their own third-round pick. But that would mean giving up the number five overall pick in the draft.
No, it would be for next year.
Oh, that's right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
I wouldn't do it for that. You know what I'm saying? Yes, like, I wouldn't trade the fifth pick in the draft.
You are absolutely
correct.
But
I would trade my next year's first-round pick.
Correct. It would be
to do
the 2026 first-round pick.
Yeah.
My mistake. So
those picks are supposedly valuable, and you do have to be realistic and say there is a possibility that the Predators' first-round pick next year could be pretty high. If it doesn't work out this year.
615-737-1025. I hope that was educational, listener, asking about offer sheets. Because as we talked about yesterday, identifying players, younger players, who you could take that calculated risk on, offer sheets are one way you can do that. We talked about Marco Rossi yesterday. He is eligible for an offer sheet. So that is one way the Predators could go about this.
And don't forget, too, this is the last part, that you threaten to do an offer sheet, but really you're talking to the GM and saying, hey, if you're not sold on this guy, we're thinking about an offer sheet here. Can we talk trade? Because that is when you can kind of pinpoint the value, too. You could work it out that way, too.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on the NHL draft, and we'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason,
D-May Svingen, and Donick,
1025, 1063. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen. Here with you, Stillman and Company, coming up next. Barry Trotz, scheduled to join Jared Stillman at approximately 3:40 p.m. And here's a nice surprise, because Jared wasn't sure he's going to be able to join us as he gets set up at Bridgestone Arena. But Jared Stillman is indeed here. Hello, Jared. How are you?
I am fabulous. We are hanging out here at the top of the BetMGM Sports Lounge, and Barry Trotz will be sitting right across from me at 3:40 today in 2 hours, basically. He'll be sitting here, and I don't know if you guys are looking at the stream or not, but I got questions. So I got questions, and so I'm excited, and I'm glad to be here. And I will tell you this. You know, I was listening to somebody complain today about the fact that the NBA draft is right after the end of the NBA Finals. Like, can we have a little time in between, get excited about the draft? And I've realized, I'm like, you know what? They're doing all this because they're just, football's off. So let's get all of our stuff out of the way. And then everybody else wants to take off for the summer. That's what I've realized it's about. It is football's off. Let's get our drafts in. Let's get our free agency periods in. And then let's go out to our cottages in Muskoka and enjoy our time.
There's a lot
off.
Of cottages.
There are a lot of cottages. Yeah.
Let me tell you, I've learned a lot about cottages.
Yes.
Which I do not own, by the way. Neither do, I guess, you know, Lindsay's family does. But I do not own a cottage. But, man, it sounds like everybody in Canada has a cottage. So
yes,
there will probably be a lot of cottages that will be people will head to after the draft.
So I don't want you to give too much away because, as you said, you do have questions for Barry Trotz. So I'll try to keep it general. What are you hoping to hear from Barry Trotz today? What message are you hoping he provides to you, and by extension, Predators fans, about the next couple of weeks and the immediate future of the Predators?
You know, Adam, I think you're going to like this because I think you've kind of been searching for this yourself. And that is, are we more worried about what's going to happen in 2025 and 2026, or are we more worried about what I keep calling the 2028 playoffs? Like, are we more worried about the 2026 playoffs and making the 2026 playoffs, or are we more worried about the 2028 playoffs, the 2029 playoffs? Because let's say they draft James Higgins on Friday night. I mean, James Higgins may go back to BC, but I can guarantee you James Higgins, if everything goes to plan, will be the number one center of the Nashville Predators in 2028 and 2029. And I think for the last year, they tried to kind of do both. And I give them credit because they didn't really mortgage any future assets outside of some contracts and cap space and things like that. They didn't really mortgage any future assets last year by going for it. They didn't turn around and trade, you know, two first rounders and a young prospect to try to get Mitch Marner. They just spent money on Forsberg, or on Stamkos, Marchessault, and Brady Shea. But last year was kind of trying to do both, trying to build up a team for 2025 while also still keeping everything in the oven for down the road. I think there needs to be an honest direction for the fans of where is the priority. Is the priority the 2028 playoffs, or are they the 2026 playoffs? And while most of us would assume it's probably going to be the 2028 playoffs, the thing that is that throws a wrench into all of this, and I don't know what Bill Haslam has said or not, is if the owner comes down and says, make the playoffs or else, and then all of a sudden the general manager and the coaches have to act accordingly. So I think that's the big thing I want to know. Is this about the 2026 playoffs, or is the main priority about the 2028-2029 playoffs?
Now, are you, because they just hired a new coach in Luke Richardson, will that be one of your questions? Because to me, we talked about it earlier, and we came at it from two or three different angles, and my angle was more so what I thought you would think is, you know, because of what happened last season, he's on the hot seat, Coach Bruno. You bring another guy in with experience at that position, I mean, at the coach's position, head coach's position. Can this potentially be something that you look toward moving to if indeed the season doesn't start off well?
Derek, just say it, man. Is this Andrew Burnett Insurance?
I'm sure. And I know that's a question you have for him.
It is. I think it. So he's going to meet with the media at 3:00. We're going to run that live. And the reason why I decided to do that, you know, they are not streaming this press conference. So there would be some things that would come out maybe on Twitter. But as far as the fans themselves, we made the choice today to air the press conference live at 3:00 instead of just waiting until he sits down with us, because I do think there's going to be a lot of questions that get asked and answered in the 3:00 media session that then instead of having to rehash with him at 3:00, we can maybe go a little bit deeper at 3:40. Mm-hmm. And I do expect that he'll get asked about, is Luke Richardson, a former head coach who has no ties to Andrew Burnett, is he Andrew Burnett Insurance? I don't know the answer to that. But yes, to your point, if it doesn't get asked in his press conference, it absolutely will get asked in our conversation about whether or not this is Andrew Burnett Insurance and whether or not Andrew Burnett, who again has never worked with Luke Richardson, if this was an Andrew Burnett hire or this was a Barry Trotz hire.
And Jared, I think it's fair to ask that question. I would say, though, that you cannot avoid that perception. The second you see that, it's going to be out there. People are going to wonder that. And I don't know that you can avoid that. But I would think it's important, and I think this is what you're going to definitely hear from Barry Trotz, and maybe you've got an angle to this if it's not sufficiently asked this way in the press conference, is I think Luke Richardson brings a couple of things to the table that they were lacking on the staff. And I always think that if your coach is wired one way, the good cop, if you will, or the player's coach, you need that other guy that is the Sipowicz is and Luke Richardson is a 6'4" Sipowicz, right? His body type's a little different. But I think Luke Richardson, A, is a defensive minded guy. He was a great defenseman in the league. He's tough. He's physically, he's got a presence. They didn't have that on the staff. And I think, I don't know if I would say defensive coordinator, but they did mention a couple times in the press conference defense. So I'm wondering about that, right? Is can he mesh and provide something that the staff was lacking last year?
I think that, you know, in a perfect world, Willie, that's exactly what he's going to do. Is he's going to come in here and he's going to help out the defense, which was so terrible last year. He's going to come in here and help out the defense, and he's going to be Phil Housley 2.0. Is, I think, the hope here. But I do think it is unavoidable that Andrew Burnett is probably on the single hottest seat you could be on. And, I mean, I woke up this morning thinking Andrew Burnett was on a 10 out of 10 hot seat, and if things didn't go right at the beginning, Carl Taylor could end up being the head coach of the Predators. Now, I believe that Andrew Burnett is still on a 10 out of 10 hot seat, but that Luke Richardson could be the next head coach of the Predators. But to your point, I mean, I think that what Barry's going to say is that his hope is Luke Richardson comes in here and helps the defense, and that Andrew Burnett is the coach the whole season and for the next 10 years, and that Luke Richardson's a part of that. But again, the word I used was insurance. I mean, I've got insurance on my car. I know you guys have it on yours, unless you're driving illegally. You guys have car insurance, and I think we all hope that we never get in a wreck, knock on wood. But And I don't think Barry Trotz is going to go there with me on the but the but seems very glaring here.
I do want to ask you, we are going to have Scott Wheeler on the program tomorrow, I believe, at 11:20, the Athletics NHL draft analyst. He released his final mock draft this morning. Has the Predators taking Porter Martone with the 5th overall pick? How would you feel if that is who the Predators take number 5 overall on Friday?
I would be a little surprised if that's what happens. The only reason I say that is because I don't expect that Barry Trotz thinks he'll be picking high next year. And I have had Barry Trotz on the show probably 40 times over the last 2.5 years. And the one thing he has constantly said is he has been searching for that number one center. And unlike somebody that wasn't the head coach here for 20 years, Barry Trotz does have the same frustration the fans have about never having a true number one center. Barry Trotz has as the coach of those teams that was making the playoffs with guys that were good. Like Mike Fisher was a good center, but he wasn't a true number one center. There are so many centers in this draft. It's almost like an ice cream flavor. You know, which one do you like? Do you like Denoyer? Do you like Martin? Do you like O'Brien? Do you like Frindell? Do you like Higgins? I don't see Barry Trotz passing on the center.
I think you're going to hear a lot of that, Jared, and you are dead on. I think in a perfect world, you would take the center. But what if they have Martone just valued higher? They think he's that much better than the center? Because you always hammer the Titans for drafting a guy at tackle and playing him at guard, right? There are plenty of players in different sports that are drafted at one position, but they can't stay at that position anyway. So it's a little less black and white than I think we want it to be, because I'm with you. I would love for them to say, this is our number one center, right? But it's not always that easy.
If that's the case, if they think that Martone is the third best player and they're on the clock at 5 and they think he's significantly better than these other centers, I would advise that they take him. I just don't see that happening. I just see them taking a center the way that this draft is playing out.
Well, that'll do it for us today. Barry Trotz will sit down with Jared Stillman at Bridgestone Arena at approximately 3:40. Jared will also carry Barry Trotz's news conference with reporters live starting at 3 o'clock. Looking forward to hearing all of it. Stillman & Company coming up next.
Be loving your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Tuesday. Peace.